I'm going to call the meeting to order, the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee. Members, today we are going to be hearing two bills, House File 40, Representative Peterson, and House File 246, which is my bill. Both are on quality rating systems. So Representative Rosenthal is going to get his first chance of the gavel today. We're eager to see how that goes. And I know Representative Greiling, I think you're leaving early because you're getting an award tonight, aren't you, or something?
Yes.
What can you tell us about that, Representative Greiling?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's actually an award for education. I can't remember what it's called, but it's over at the Radisson and on the university campus, and it's the Minnesota Women's Consortium, and they're honoring all people that work on children education, hearts and minds for youth, or something like that. So I'm very honored, and thank you for the recognition.
Oh, very good, and we're very proud of you and your work. So, although we'll miss your tough questions here at the hearing, we'll just to catch up with us. If Representative Peterson wants to come down to the table and start to get ready, we will have the minutes to pass. Maybe we'll give you a break, Representative Rosenthal. Representative Ward?
Representative Ward, I just want to take a minute just to thank you and all of the staff for the summit yesterday. It was absolutely amazing. It was wonderful, and I know how much work went into that. And Representative Glenn and I were just talking about that, and a number of my colleagues have talked about it today, and to all the audience, kudos, job well done, and very, very good information for us as legislators as well.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Representative Ward. It really was quite an event, you know, and I'm getting a lot of emails and comments, and I think people really found David Lawrence very inspirational, you know, in terms of challenging the differences between Florida and Minnesota, and you think, wow, we got to be better than Florida, right? I mean, it was very good, and then hearing what the Blandon Foundation is doing up in Grand Rapids. So I appreciate your kind comments and all of these folks that were there to hear the message, and I think hopefully it's the beginning and continuation of this journey we're on that we get to do good things for little kids and keep doing that. So thank you, and again, thank you to the staff. I know Sarah and Matthew worked very hard on this, and it is not easy, you know. We don't have events in the House chamber outside of session very, very often at all. And I know a lot of my constituents, your constituents were there and thought that was just a beautiful place to be in as well, to have that event. So thank you all for all of your work. Good. With that, we will move the minutes. Let's see. I thought you were going to do the minutes, Representative Ward. Let's see, Representative Downey, have you looked at the minutes today?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Would you like to move them?
Don't move.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Downey moves approval of the minutes for January 27th. Any discussion? Okay. Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes for January 27th are approved. Well, now, Representative Peterson, this is going to be a little bit of an experiment, our first bill for the session. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much.
Would you like to move your bill?
I would. I move that House File 40 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Division Omnibus Bill.
Representative Peterson moves that House File 40 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill. Let's see, do you have a motion to put the bill in the form that you would like it?
Yes, I would ask that you, there's an author's amendment, and it is labeled A090010, I guess. And it is really technical amendments, and these were technical amendments that came from the Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Education, and we worked on them together and agreed that they were good changes, and so I would move these amendments.
Okay, so Representative Peterson has an author's amendment. If you don't have the numbers, let us know, A09-0010. May have a motion to put the bill right in the form, so it's so moved. Representative, just reading here just a second. Does everyone have the amendment? Is there any discussion on the amendment? Okay. Hearing none, those in favor, motion by signifying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion prevails, and the amendment is added to the bill. Representative Peterson, would you like to present your bill to the committee, please?
Thank you. I would also like to call Louise Stoney to the discussion process here, because she's going to be discussing the bill with me. And so if she'd like to come up and get prepared, that would be helpful also. This is Louise Stoney, who has been the consultant who's been working with us for the past year. And our goal has been, over the past year, to develop a quality program for early childhood programs, and so that all of our children would be ready for kindergarten by 2020. She comes from Pennsylvania, and she'll talk more about not only her credentials, but also about what we have discussed for the past year. Now, many of you around this table know that I have a teaching background that has included early childhood, kindergarten, high school, where I taught English and worked with students with learning disabilities, dyslexia by another term, and I have worked in school districts in Chicago, Illinois, Mound View, Minnesota, and Robbinsdale school districts. So I know firsthand the difference that it makes when a child comes to kindergarten and has the readiness and the literacy skills necessary to begin a more formal learning process. And I've also seen students at the other end of this process of school education when they get to high school, and they've had to struggle for years because they haven't had that kind of preparation. I'm also very pleased to co-chair the Early Childhood Caucus, and that is a bicameral, bipartisan caucus. It has about 130 members from the House and the Senate. And we also have been working, at least leaders have been working for the past year, again with Louise Stoney and others, to try to reach consensus on a vision that we could all agree on. And what you see before you in the bill number 40, is that vision that we have come to consensus around. And it is a vision for Minnesota's early childhood care and education system. And it ensures that all Minnesota's children can access high-quality early learning and care in a range of settings that meet the needs of children and families. And this includes a system building. It establishes an early care framework, early care and education framework, and it improves the learning opportunities for our youngest children. It also sets up an accountability system. It uses the QRS, the quality rating system, as a tool to ensure that publicly funded, regulated early learning and care services in both public and private market programs are high quality. And I think that's something we all want, as well as parents and the public. And then it establishes a plan to link all the funding to framework over time. Last but not least, it helps ensure that high quality early learning and care settings are available for all Minnesota's children and families, particularly focused on our most at-risk families. Participation is voluntary, both for the provider and the parents, and it does allow parent choice. I think it's a vision that is exciting and certainly one that we need to address, and after years, at least the 6 years that I've been here in the legislature, we have talked about establishing this kind of vision and really getting to the business of assuring that our children are ready for kindergarten. With that, I'm going to ask Louise Stoney to give you more background about this particular vision.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to this committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Louise Stoney. It's an honor to be here, and it's been an honor to work with all of you. For those of you who aren't familiar with me or my work, why don't you speak into the fish? Can you hear?
I think it's behind me?
It's kind of awkward with this. Wait a minute.
I think you can move that. There you go.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah.
I've worked in approximately 35 states over the past 30 years. I've worked in most major cities. I've also worked with the Cherokee Nation. I currently co-direct a project at Cornell University with Dr. Mildred Warner called Linking Economic Development and Child Care. I founded an organization called the Alliance for Early Childhood Finance. So that gives you some sense of my background. I first began to work with Minnesota a little over a year ago when I was asked to come be the McAvoy lecturer. And at that point, I did met with the caucus. And then I came back again several months later to work with the legislature again and with the University of Minnesota on a family impact seminar. And at that point, members of the caucus asked me if I would work with them on a retreat. They wanted to take a retreat and see if they couldn't work together to forge an agenda. So I worked with them. I was incredibly impressed by the time and the commitment that they spent working on this issue together. And they forged an agreement, which is what's in this bill. But this is the agreement that was forged by the caucus. So you may wonder why I am very excited about a bill that is essentially a vision. I'm excited about it because it's all about leadership. What Minnesota needs, what our nation needs most right now is leadership. For those of you who were at the summit yesterday, you heard very clearly from David Lawrence, from Jim Houlihan, how crucial leadership had been in their communities in terms of making change. So to me, one of the most important pieces is that this is a bill that is codifying the division, codifying the statement, codifying the intent to provide leadership around two key issues, quality and accountability. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry. There we go. One of the things that we know, I am not going to reiterate all the research on quality. I don't need to. Many of you heard this yesterday. I know you have many leaders in Minnesota who have shared this with you. I'm just going to underscore a really key point. High quality is what matters in terms of getting results for kids. If we want children to be prepared for school, we need high quality early care and education programs, and we need an accountability system that allows us to get to high quality. That's what this bill is all about. What do I mean by high quality? These are key points that come from the research. This work is pulled from the science-based framework, which was authored by Dr. Jack Shonkoff, who's at Harvard University, and who brought together a national team. They pored over all the research. These are the key elements of quality. What's important about the bill that's before you is that in addition to making quality central, it's focusing on a systems approach. Because one of the other things we know from research is that it's entirely possible to have high quality in a wide range of settings. The issue is to think clearly about what are the key principles and how do we embed those principles in all the settings. So that's indeed what this work is all about. The challenge for the early childhood education system is that we have so many players. This is a picture here, or a little picture that I did, that sort of tries to represent the diversity in our field. We have home-based providers, we have center-based providers, we have providers in schools, we have providers in community-based organizations, we have for-profit and non-profit. And the challenge in working on early childhood education policy is to create a standards-based system that can embrace all of these settings. The other challenge is, you see in this picture that mom and her child are in the center. Early childhood education in the United States is very parent-driven. It's very driven by parent choice. What we need is a system that makes sense to parents and that begins to allow them to navigate their system in addition to making sure that our public dollars make sense. That's what this bill is all about. Now I want to talk for just... Oh, stop before I go on. So basically what I'm suggesting is that right now in the current system, when you look at all those different providers, the way dollars flow right now is very narrow. And generally, each one of the funding schemes has its own rules, its own regulations, it's typically its own standards. And so what I often say is that it's the hardening of the categories. We've got this very rigid system with these different rules and basically separate silos. What that does is to make it really challenging. Last night, many of you heard from, you're going to help me say this, Estaca? Itasca. Thank you. you heard from this wonderful program in Itasca that's just doing, I have to tell you, I'm incredibly impressed. If you look at the results, I had a chance this morning to look more at some of the scores that are coming out of this program. Extremely well done. But one of the things that's really significant about what they're doing is that they're breaking down these silos. They are using funding from multiple funding streams, and they're trying to bridge different systems. And one of the things that I was joking with them about when I talked to them later was I said to them, what you didn't tell everyone was all the people that are sweating behind those doors in the administrative office is trying to make all this make sense. And they started laughing. They said, you're right. You know, how much time do you spend filling out multiple papers? How much time do you spend trying to make sense of multiple systems? So basically, what we're looking at is a system that begins to address some of these separate silos. Because what separate silos do is encourage competition among providers for limited resources instead of bringing everybody together so that they can provide the kind of comprehensive services children and families need. They discourage providers from tapping all the funding streams. And they result in this sort of dueling administrative function. So, good results, as we heard yesterday, come from sustained, collaborative, system-wide approaches. And that requires standards that are framed in a big tent. Now I want to pause for just a minute and talk to you a little bit about parents and about the experience of parents. This is a pie chart that looks at early childhood education revenue, and it was created by work that I did when I looked nationally at all the dollars that are in early childhood education. And what you see in this pie chart is that that most of the money in the early childhood education system is actually user fees. It's money that's coming out of the pockets of parents. So we spend most of our time focusing on that 39% of the pie, that government slice of the pie that's smaller. But the bottom line is, if we really want to affect the outcomes for children, parents have to work with us. They have to be part of the system. They have to be participating with their dollars and with their choices. So it needs to be a system that makes sense to parents. This is especially true in Minnesota, where your data is even stronger. This is data from the Itasca project. You'll see here, 80%, they estimated that 80% of the dollars were coming from families. So again, you're talking about a system here in Minnesota that's heavily driven by families. We need families to be part of this process. That's one of the beauties of quality aid. Another key issue for families is this. They're not just looking for one program. They're often looking for multiple programs. I was pretty astonished when I saw these data, which are Minnesota data, that show how many families are using multiple settings even for one child. So again, we need to make the system easy to manage for families. We need to make it understandable for families. We also need to begin to rationalize and make sense out of the different standards in the different funding streams if we're talking about children being in multiple settings during the same day. Okay. So, what I've been working with the caucus on is a new approach, and it's a new approach based on something called quality rating and improvement systems. And what is it that I think is so great about quality rating and improvement systems? Well, first of all, as I said to you before, it's a system that makes sense to parents. Basically, what you do is you take standards, there's five key domains, you array them by levels or by tiers, and usually attributed to stars. So from the parent's perspective, it's a system that's understandable to them. They're used to thinking about four-star hotels or four-star restaurants. And so it's very accessible to them. Secondly, by arraying your standards in tiers, it's supporting continuous quality improvement on the part of your providers. So by having a system that's that broad, there's a place at the table for everybody. And then there's ability for everybody to get better over time as they move up stars. It's research-based so that you can begin to be very clear about what the standards are based on what you know. And one of the things I really like about it, too, is that quality rating systems really focus on what providers have in common, not what divides them. In our separate silos approach, we're often in the situation of, well, you know, I'm a Head Start program. My standards are better than your standards. Instead, we're saying, wait a minute, what's good for kids It's good for all children. We can bring all of these pieces together into a large umbrella that makes sense for everyone. Finally, quality rating and improvement is a national movement. It's actually only been in about 10 years. The first quality rating system was just a little over 10 years ago, first launched. And now, just about every state is either launching, piloting, or exploring a quality rating system. In fact, to give you the exact number, currently 18 states have a statewide quality rating system, about 8 are piloting systems, and 26 are now exploring or planning a quality rating system. To give you some sense of what's underneath the quality rating system, typically they're based on 3 key factors. Standards for programs, so what programs need to know and do in order to have good outcomes for children. Standards for practitioners, what teachers and other caregivers need to know and do in order to have good outcomes for children. Guided by early learning guidelines for what children need to know and do. So it's a process that allows you to have multiple ways of measuring multiple inputs and multiple outputs. The other thing that I really like and what about quality rating systems is that it can become a framework for fundamentally reforming your early turn education system. As I said to you earlier, my expertise and what I often work with states on is the money side. But what a quality rating system does is to help me be able to make sense of the system so that I can be effective in increasing the dollars. If you look at this chart, this is a chart that my colleague Ann Mitchell and I created for the states that we work with. And it starts over in the far corner in the box that says quality standards for programs and practitioners. That's your quality standards, your quality rating system. And then if you move to the right, where it says support and infrastructure, in order for quality standards to be effective, you need to have support. You need to help. You need to be able to have technical assistance for programs to help them meet the standards, training for providers to help them meet the standards. You need a whole series of supports. You've already got a lot of those supports right here in Minnesota, but they're in the silos. So you've got a training and technical assistance system for Head Start. You have teacher preparation for a number of your school readiness work. You've got resource and referral agencies. What this kind of a system can do is to help you begin to align and make sense of all those pieces so that everybody's moving in the same direction. Similarly with monitoring, states that are working on quality ratings, this is once they get a pretty established system, can begin to make sense out of their monitoring so they don't have multiple monitors going into looking at the same program. They can begin to coordinate their efforts, which is, again, for somebody like me who's looking at the money, that's a win because I don't want to spend a lot of money on admin if we can coordinate a better way to do this. Financing. Strategically, states are increasingly linking dollars to quality rating, which allows us, again, to target our dollars to programs that are providing more intensive services, more high-quality services, focuses on children that most need it. And then, as I've spoken to a lot, a quality rating system also is a way to deeply engage consumers and other funders in the system. This checkbox expands the financing pictures that I previously showed you because I want to underscore a point that often trips people up with quality rating. Many people are very tied to particular types of funding. Some policymakers really like portable subsidies that follow the child. And in your case, in Minnesota, you have some of these. These are like your child care assistance program, your pre-K allowance, private scholarships, tax credits. Those are all what I would call portable subsidies. You also have in this state direct subsidies. Those are typically grants to go to Head Start programs, to school readiness programs. You might have quality grants to go to early childhood programs. Both types of funding can be linked to a quality rating system and can be arrayed by peers. I have done this sort of work in states. I've done all sorts of intricate actually mapping. So the bottom line is that you need both. There's value to both. This is not a system that has to be attached to one funding stream or another. In fact, I would argue it shouldn't be attached, that there could be a whole menu of funding streams that are linked to the quality rating system. As I said to you, I'm a money person. What this chart shows you is, I often say to people in states where I work, you give me a funding stream and I'll figure out how to finance our return education system. Our return education services with it. The problem is, without something like a quality and rating and improvement system, it's hard for me to make it simple. It's much easier to make it simpler, more rational, when I have a quality, because if all of these different entities are willing to accept a common set of standards, then we can begin to link funding from all these different systems, maximize your dollars to get the biggest bang for the buck. This next picture shows you what that might look like in two different settings. These data are actually based on an actual analysis that Ann and I did in Pennsylvania. And it shows you on the, it's my left, but maybe you're right. But one bar chart shows you a center that has 10% subsidy enrollment children. So in other words, a very significant percentage of the families that attend that center would be families that pay private fees. But that center is still eligible for some direct subsidy so that they can provide high quality services with good teachers and good program elements. But most of their dollars are going to come from parent tuition. On the other side is a program that serves mostly low-income children. There you see significantly more subsidy. You see how the layering is different. What I'm trying to show you is that you can create a financing scheme that's linked to a quality rating system that caps multiple funding streams that allows you to also target your dollars. So within a quality rating system, you can have a real win-win. You can have both universal and targeted services. So, in closing, what I'm really focusing on is how important it is to think up here, to have a big tent and a long-term strategy. I'm making this out to be very straightforward, very clear. I try to make things as simple as possible, but I don't want to kid you. This isn't simple. And there are going to be lots of battles. One of the main problems in making these kinds of changes, particularly in a climate where dollars are limited, is that providers are tied to a particular funding stream. And they're afraid to make a change, and they're going to be afraid that they might lose their funding if we move towards this. You can build this in a way that you incorporate funds, that you incorporate standards. It does not have to be that kind of a situation. But it's going to be important to keep your eye on the prize and not get lost in current practice. Right now, you're testing a quality rating system called Parent Aware. Right now, Parent Aware is in a pilot phase and it's being researched. What does that mean? Because it's in research, it means that your Parent Aware pilot can't change a lot. Because in order for the researchers to be able to get the results that they want, it has to be exact. It has to be the same. It has to be similar. That's good for the research team, so they can figure out what measures work. That's bad for you when you want to go statewide in a way that's cost-effective, that's going to reach everybody, that's going to embrace everything. So what I'm suggesting is that you don't automatically say this is about taking Parent Aware statewide. You say this is about creating a statewide quality rating system that is informed by Parent Aware, that learns from Parent Aware, and that, quite frankly, will incorporate Parent Aware. But I think it's really easy to get caught up in what Parent Aware there is or isn't and think that that defines the future. Finally, I also want to really encourage you to forge ahead, even in tight fiscal times. I have worked with many states on quality rating systems, and I can tell you with all honesty, none of them are flawed. All of them are struggling with money. This is something that you can do with limited dollars. You can build the system with limited dollars. And then, slowly, as new dollars become available, as opportunities become available, you can link dollars. And in fact, we're seeing that sort of happening already in these two bills that we're going to talk about this morning. The first bill is a vision bill, lays out the framework. The second bill is talking about a first step in terms of being able to link some dollars to it. So I think it's an extremely important way to go, and I applaud this work and encourage you to keep working.
Thank you. With that, members will see if there are any questions. House File 246 is somewhat similar, so some of the questions, just to save time, will probably apply to both bills. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and so I probably won't be redundant and ask the same questions on both bills, but I do want to get some questions out. Representative Peterson, on page 1 of your bill, line 14, using the framework as a tool to ensure that publicly funded, could you please define for this committee what you mean by publicly funded? Is that through direct appropriation, direct subsidization of the care center, or is that if a user of the care program is receiving public assistance in some way, or are you wrapping those all together? I guess I don't understand publicly funded.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Biskins, the publicly funded would be different streams. We have it would be any, to me, it's all of the monies that come through the legislature are public dollars, and that they come, some of them come through Health and Human Services, through the child care. Some of them come in direct grants through this particular committee. We vote on some direct grants to particular programs, and so there are public dollars that do go through our legislative process each year, and those to me are the public dollars. Then we have private dollars from parents and from foundations and from other kinds of funders that would give dollars through the private, the means, businesses, etc. But the public dollars are the ones that come through this body.
Representative Scum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just so you know where I'm going to go with this, I do have a libertarian slant that I'm going to get to at the end, because as I said before, Representative Peterson, and you know this, I am a liberal, so we're going to get to that here. But I guess if we're talking about publicly funded on line 1.1, then how do we ensure, 1.14, how do we ensure on line 1.15 that we're providing quality care in both the public and private market programs? How are you going to enforce that? I can understand in the public if we're saying, you know, it's money that's coming through the state. But what tool is it your vision that we will at some point be able to enforce something like this in the private market?
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Biskins, the providers voluntarily determine in the private sector or the public sector whether they want to participate. This isn't mandated. And so if they decide they want to participate, then they will look at the kind of standards, the kind of inputs that are necessary to establish a quality program, and they will participate and get the kinds of ratings and be part of the system. Now that's, you know, and the parents likewise have a choice of whether they want to participate or not. And I don't know with Ms. Stoney if you would like to add anything. Dr. Stoney?
No, that's very good.
Representative.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Peterson. If it is voluntary, then I would ask you to consider your choice of words on page 1, line 14, in which you use the word ensure. Because ensure, to me, does not invoke a voluntary. In fact, to me, ensure in legislation invokes a mandatory. I guess my question is, if we're working to ensure that every single child care program in the state, be it in the public or the private market, adheres to the standards put forward. Now here's the libertarian in me coming out. All right? What are the safeguards that are in place which would prevent, ultimately, this becoming an indoctrination program versus an education program? And I know I'm seeing black helicopters, forgive me, all right, but I think if these questions, you know, over history had been asked in different times and different places, it might have made a difference. So I guess if you could help me with that, what safeguards are going to be in place? Or, you know, because, you know, even Ms. Stoney, in your presentation, and I wrote down your quote, you quoted, so that everyone is moving in the same direction. Now, I'm I have a concern with that, you know, especially in a federalist system, especially as a libertarian. If everyone is moving in the same direction in both the public and the private market, then where is the safeguard for liberty? Where is the safeguard for diversity?
Representative Biskins, first of all, let me remind you that we are working off the amendment. And so the amendment does delete, ensure that, and inserts, increase the number of. So that's one thing is we, this amendment came forward from the department, so I have to say it's something that was recommended, I think, to the author. With that,
I appreciate that.
Representative Peterson, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for helping me out on that one. Mm-hmm. And I would also go back to the beginning of line 1.14, which says that using the framework as the tool. And so, you know, if we're working toward quality programs, the direction of working in quality, direction of establishing quality programs seems to be one that everyone might want to look at, but maybe that is taking away our liberty. I don't know. There's still choice in it. Ms. Stoney, would you like to answer?
Ms. Stoney?
Since you were all addressed?
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee. I actually would argue that quality rating and improvement systems greatly support diversity. In fact, they celebrate diversity. What a quality rating system does is to define a set of key principles of 5 domains that are important, and give general, but there are a wide range of ways in which programs can comply with these requirements. This is not a cookie cutter approach. This is not saying you must use this curriculum, you must use this. This is saying that these are standards that basically ensure that programs are doing developmentally appropriate practice. Developmentally appropriate practice is about learning different ways, observing children, understanding the different ways they learn, and adapting the learning environment so that you meet the needs of the child, including the child's culture, including the child's family background, including the community in which the child lives, the way the child learns, a wide range of things. Our goal is to create something that is very diverse and allows families to have all sorts of choices in all sorts of settings. So when I say move in the same direction, what I mean is moving in the direction of ensuring that they are preparing children for school. And there is a pedagogy. There are a set of ways in which teachers interact with children that can produce results. But that does not mean that it has to be a rigid, cookie-cutter, controlled way in which children are taught.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your indulgence. The more I ask now, the less I ask when another bill by another officer is up in front, so I do appreciate that.
Yeah. We do want to be mindful of the time as well, so proceed.
Just one final question, I guess, I've been a public school educator myself for over 25 years, and I know about pedagogy, and I know how pedagogy can change over time, and what looks good today may not look good tomorrow. But if we're all under the same system and we're all using one pedagogy, then the opportunity for experimentation and finding new pedagogies and improvements, you know, becomes stifled. And so the final question is for you, Representative Peterson, with your vast experience in public schools yourself, why wouldn't this type of system work in the K-12 system?
Representative Peterson?
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins. Well, I really would have to do some research on that. Right now, I have been focused for a year on the early childhood programs. And I think, you know, some of this has already happened with charter schools, such as you are in currently, working in right now, where you have the opportunity to explore different ideas, different programs. And there certainly are, I think, an increasing number of standards and quality rating systems being applied to the K-12 system. And they already have their system of quality standards in place, I believe. But the early childhood programs have been pretty wide open. There really hasn't been any umbrella that would take into account a system for quality programs.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Peterson. Yes, we do have a system of standards. I concur with that. It's the waiting that I'm more interested in, and I just throw that out rhetorically.
Representative Downing?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Peterson. Couple of questions. One follow-up to Representative Biskin. When we're talking about public and private market programs, and I appreciate there's this publicly funded tag then, the recollection is that the vast majority of child care is actually provided kind of in-home within extended family networks. And I'm curious, would the rating system then of necessity apply to all of those people who are perhaps leveraging state funding for in-home type care or extended family type care?
Representative Peterson?
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, again, this is voluntary by the practitioner. If they would like to be involved, that would be open for them. And in fact, it was interesting to talk to one of the supervisors for a consortium up in northern Minnesota, a town I'll let go. And they were very, very excited about the opportunity for family, friends, and neighbors to begin to participate in this kind of a program, because it provides caretakers, whether they're in family situations or school situations, daycare situations, child care situations. They want to do better by the students and the children in their care. And they were excited about getting more information about particular programs, better ways, better best practices, better things to do with their students that will help their learning. And so they meet on a regular basis, and this supervisor goes around and into those home settings on a regular basis to help them to improve what they're doing with their inputs, with their children. And so I think it opens up real possibilities and an excitement for many of those who are providing home-based care.
Representative Downey?
Separate question then. Have we explored, and I'm not sure, perhaps there's something else in statute or perhaps there's something in the actual framework itself, but the liability that the state might actually be taking on to the extent that we begin kind of vouching for the quality of a care center and perhaps incidents that would occur there? Are we taking on some liability for having rated them a 4-star rating and some unfortunate incident occurs?
Representative Peterson?
Madam Chair, Representative, we take on some liability already when we license them, and that's for just the basic kind of care that those children receive while they're in that setting. But this is actually for the learning portion of that, for helping children get prepared. And again, it's voluntary for parents to choose and parents' choice, and so it's not mandatory. It is voluntary, and parents can choose, as they do now, and also for providers to choose whether they want to participate and take this on. And maybe, Louise, you can add any piece. Have you had any experience with this issue of liability at all?
I think you did an excellent job of answering the question. The bottom line is that in most cases, licensing is a key function, is a key component of a quality rating system, and you've already taken on that liability issue and already addressed the liability issue in the licensing. One of the things that I did was actually put up an extra slide up here to give you some sense of the divisions between, you had asked previously a question about many cares provided inside of homes. And what you see in this chart here is that you see the standards-based system in that one box, which we've been talking about. What we're talking about is a quality rating and improvement system for caregivers who choose to be part of a formal early care and education system. There are always going to be caregivers that choose to be a more informal, unregulated, home-based setting, and families can still make that choice. And that's the box down below, Family Friendly Neighbor. We are not expecting to regulate those caregivers.
Thank you. So the licensure, just Madam Chair, to clarify, the licensure actually kind of covers the liability component along with this. Might I just have one more follow-up?
Representative Downing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's a date, July 1, 2009, effective date. And I'm curious, in our testimony from Mr. Benson on the MELF pilot, he referenced producing some kind of an implementation plan, some advice to us, to the legislature, for the kind of scaling and rolling out of the rating system. Are we jumping the gun here, or how does this implementation effective July 1 kind of work in concert with what MELF is doing?
Representative Peterson. Madam Chair, Representative Downey, it actually works very well. I'm going to state again that this is a vision statement, and so it doesn't have the implementation pieces in it. It actually begins the process of looking at some implementation pieces and looking in the end at what Parent Aware is doing, what MELF is doing, and incorporating that, if it seems feasible, into whatever plan we decide within this legislative body works for our particular standards. Louise?
No, I you did an excellent job. That's exactly what I would have said. I think that what you're doing is making a plan, getting ready, taking a look at what it's going to cost you, what you need to implement in order to take this statewide, and Parent Aware is going to inform that. But as I've said in my work with the caucus, I am not sure that you necessarily want to lockstep expand Parent Aware statewide. There may be less expensive ways to do this, and you can begin to look at those kinds of things as the Parent Aware experiment is currently going.
Representative Daly, thank you. Just a reminder, too, on the amendment, it does talk about modification in terms of the data as a result of the evaluation results. So there, I think that the department in particular wanted us to look at that on line 1.17 in terms of that. Any more questions? Representative Peterson, any final closing words?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I think this has been a very exciting project during the past year. I'm so pleased that after serving for 5 years so far in the legislature, or this is my fifth year, that we are finally putting some action to all of the discussion about early childhood care. And Representative Slawick, when I came, had been working on it before I ever got here, and has been just a leader in this whole area. And so this is very exciting, and I think to have that many members of both the House and the Senate involved in putting this together and working on this project, I think that says something about the need and the intensity and the passion that people have for assuring that our very youngest learners are ready when they come to school. And they're ready for the workforce, and they're ready for higher education, and all the things that come with the school that they will attend.
Representative Peterson renews her motion that House File 40 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Division Omnibus Bill. As amended. First bill, we're getting, so is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye. Representative Biskin.
Madam Chair, are you sure if you lay a bill over that you have to vote to lay it over?
I don't
think
we do.
No, you
we're
do not.
Discussing that, we just lay it over. That's what I thought.
That is correct.
So, thank you, as a former chair. We'll just lay that over, Representative Peterson, and appreciate your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Members, what's going to happen now is Representative Rosenthal is going to come and take the gavel. I will go for testimony. We will go through my bill, and then we have some testifiers additionally on quality rating systems who want to make some comments. So hopefully we can do all this before 6 o'clock.
Okay, the next bill we have for consideration is House File 246. Representative Flowers, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Chair Rosenthal. I move House File 246 for possible inclusion in Omnibus Early Childhood Finance and Policy Bill.
I move that Representative Flowers' bill, File 246, be recommended to pass or lay over. Thank you. For possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance Policy and Division Omnibus Bill.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment.
Representative Fowler.
I'd like to move Amendment A09-0009.
Is there any discussion of the amendment? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Nancy Johnson to come down because she's going to be testifying on this. But thank you, members, for the good discussion. I think that this is a really productive discussion. This is something fairly new to us. It is an initiative that the Early Childhood Caucus has taken on, as Representative Peterson talked about. I think it really does give us the sense of more of a framework and a system in early childhood. You know, right now the legislature is funding all these separate streams of money and not necessarily having any sort of standards for them. And by having a quality rating system that puts us in a better position for us to also know where our funding is going. When you look at the bill, members, I was looking at the bill summary. See if I can find this. Which I did have. Okay, from House Research. To explain the bill, Section 1 is quality improvements. This is the bill that's the companion to Representative Peterson's in terms of it allocates the money. It's $250,000 per year. This is out of the Federal Child Care and Developmental Fund. Members, the Health and Human Services Department, is in charge of these funds. We are taking those existing funds and dedicating part of those. In Section 2, there's a provider rate differential for accreditation. So it adds providers who have received a 3-4-star rating on Parent Aware rating tool to the list of providers eligible for a rate differential. Section 3, child care services grants, requires child care services grants to begin increasingly awarded for activities that improve provider quality. Section 4, family child care technical assistance grants. To require family child care technical assistance grants to be increasingly awarded for activities that improve quality. Section 5 is Representative Peterson's bill. Section 6, quality rating improvement system collaboration. This is something we put in that the departments have probably, I don't know if you've seen this, but it's a little bit of a our efforts that require the commissioners of Education and Human Services to work together to create common standards. And one of my concerns, members, right now is for what we hear from, is it Dr. Stoney?
No.
Ms. Stoney, is that we need that common set of standards, and right now we are having a little bit of trouble having the departments agree on the set of standards, so we are requiring them to work together, and then appropriations in Section 7 for the Child Care Services Grants, the Parent Aware Rating Tool, as well as the Child Care Development Grant. You will see that in the bill, these are ... because we have to see how the funding goes here at the Capitol and this, how much we will even be able to get for this. But it is unclear right now. We would like to start, as mentioned, not to take it necessarily statewide, but to have a statewide framework and have it be taken up, which is kind of a slow take up. So ideally, we could start with a lower dollar amount and then implement this as more and more providers came on board. You know, for me, one of the most striking things yesterday is David Lawrence and I were able to go to both of the editorial boards, and so we met with both the Pioneer Press over at Pioneer Press, and we're here with the SIB, and, you know, the way he explains things is, it makes them just crystal clear. You know, when with us, you know, PRS for us, we are learning this. We are learning how it works. We are learning from the expert on why this works in other states. We are on board with it, but we are still learning about it. And one thing he would say is, everybody knows what a 5-star hotel is, right? If I said, I'm going to take you to a 5-star hotel, you'd say, yeah. If I said, well, I'm going to take you to a 1-star restaurant, you might say, well, you know, no thanks. I don't think I'll go. People understand star systems and why they're necessary, and we use them for restaurants, we use them for hotels, we use them for all kinds of things. In this case, we would know how it works with child care. One thing I wanted to share with you is the Pioneer Press editorial board asked about how the providers were feeling about this. One of the things that Ms. Stoney is doing while she's here is visiting with providers. We're getting feedback. It's not crystal clear to them either how this is going to work because it's a public-private system, because there's family child care, because there's school readiness programs. What I said in response to that, one of the things we're hearing is how is this going to work in the rural areas? If you have, and Representative Demmer talks about this, you have three child care providers, they're all full. Why would you necessarily want a star rating system? But what we hear is once one of them gets one, and the parents in town know that that's a four-star, are the other ones going to feel pressure to get rated and want to get rated? Yes, absolutely. Parents do want to know what they're buying. It's really a consumer-driven system. And I think here at the legislature, that's more and more what we should be moving towards. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will have my testifier talk about the bill, and then we'll take any questions.
Thank you.
Ms. Johnson, thank would you introduce yourself and your organization and continue with your testimony?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Nancy Johnson, and currently I'm the director of a fairly new initiative in the western suburbs of Hennepin County. It's called Caring for Kids Initiative, and we started actually providing scholarships for low-income children in the Plymouth-Wayzata area about almost 2 years ago, about a year and a half ago. And this initiative is a school district, the Wayzata Public School District. It's a social service agency, Interfaith Outreach and Community Partners, and it's 10 quality child care programs in the area. I should say child care and nursery school programs. Two of the nursery school programs are actually operated in churches. One of them is operated by the Wayzata Public Schools, and the rest of them are both nonprofit and proprietary child care programs. So right away you can see we are market-based. The idea is that the needs that both children and parents have are varied, and they vary over time. So the kinds of programs that a parent might need this year might be different by next year. So to really make this a parent-friendly system, we need to have it be about parent choice and then choices of a number of different types of programs. But one of the things that distinguishes our particular effort, and I think many of the efforts, for instance, Invest Early in Itasca, is that it's not just about any choice, it's about quality. And so how do you know that a particular family child care provider or a school readiness nursery school program or a full-time child care center is high quality and is actually doing the kinds of things in that program that will help low-income children in particular get ready for kindergarten? And that's really the state's interest in this. Not that, you know, I think that the great thing about a quality rating system, and we're seeing that in our area, is that parents who can afford to pay for quality want this information. They are definitely interested in quality ratings of specific programs. And with the state's investment in making sure that we're trying to reduce the K-12 achievement gap, which we know is about 50% of the kids are entering kindergarten with various different delays, then we need to be really focusing on how do we help parents make good choices and make sure that the programs know what they need to be doing so that every child is ready for kindergarten. We also just want to mention briefly, because the Caring for Kids initiative, like some other initiatives, is a community partnership. So part of the value of having the public schools involved along with the private programs, and we're seeing this every week there are new kind of ahas about how well this can work, is that there are resources that the public school system has, special ed, social work, other kinds of resources that families need or that children need, but oftentimes if they're in a private child care program, they're not even aware that they can get those kinds of services. So by being in this kind of a partnership, we're connecting the private sector with the public sector resources, and then you're getting kids early when you can make a difference. Also, we're connecting parents with parent education in a way that works for working parents as well as parents who are at home during the day. So there's a lot of other benefits with this kind of partnership approach. And I'd also say that the thing about the quality rating system that makes this very sort of a fast start in, I think, some areas of the state is that we already have some programs that are very high quality. It's not going to take those programs a huge amount of effort to go through a quality rating system. In other areas of the state, it's not just going through the rating system. It may also be actually improving their services, and that will take some more effort and some more funding to help them do that. But right now today, there are many suburban areas that have a number of high-quality programs, and we found that in the Plymouth-Wayzata area, so that we can just start and hit the ground running with our scholarship program and get low-income children, sort of leverage those slots that are open in those quality programs right away. I also wanted to say that the quality rating system is already starting to grow beyond just the research in the four different areas of the state that the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation is funding. There's also an expansion in the city of Minneapolis, and that's coming from another private investor in this case, or several private investors. And I think what is the interesting development of this is that we have a if we have a public investment in a statewide quality improvement and rating system, you may also be able to see private investors in certain areas saying, well, we want that right away. The state doesn't have enough money maybe to grow it as fast as they'd like to, so we'll come on board. And again, you're leveraging the private sector along with your public money. I think that's another great benefit of this. And we are starting in the kind of market-based parent choice system that a quality rating system allows you. You're starting with what the families need, what the children need, not necessarily with a specific program. But all of the programs, if they want to be part of the support from the state, must be high quality. I think that's a really important thing to understand. And then we can blend various different funding sources, as we do in the Caring for Kids initiative. So, for instance, one of the funding sources we're blending is school readiness funding that goes directly to the school system. We're also blending child care assistance money that goes to the parents through the child care program. We can blend those funds, and if any of those funds are cut back, of course, it hurts our ability to grow the program. But by having a quality rating system, then you know that all those funds are also purposed towards getting kids ready for kindergarten.
Thank you. With that, Mr. Chair, we'll stand for any questions.
Any questions, members? Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Slavik. There is not a fiscal note here, and I know there's placeholders for budgetary items. Could you just explain kind of what the mechanism will be for arriving at some of the cost numbers for the dollar numbers in the actual bill? And then maybe a corollary to that, getting back to the MELF work, absent some of those study results, would we perhaps be expending money that could be better spent after we get those results, or will we be doing some redundant work along with the parallel MELF activities?
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey. Good questions. As far as the funding, I mean, part of the funding will come from the federal funds, so the CCDF. As far as the open appropriations there, you know, there's a couple of thoughts. I mean, one thought, as you know, there's a major bill traveling through the Congress, and if we can get some of that money to come down this way, that would be a possibility. As you know, there's a $4.8 billion deficit and a February forecast that may make that bigger. So that's why those are open appropriations. We'll go through the process here in the House of setting targets. I think people have seen the committee deadlines are come out, and we have now some dates to go by that. When we have a target, I would probably be better able to fill in those blanks. So there's no fiscal note just yet. We're trying to say we can get this as a scalable program, so we could start extremely small and without a lot of money. But if there's more money available, say through something like the economic recovery at the federal level, then maybe we could make it a little bit bigger. So that's the first part of your question. The second part was, can you remind me?
Just whether or not there's some redundant expenditures given the MELF activity running in parallel that we're kind of learning from as we go.
Well, you know, Representative Downey, something that I've been thinking about is how we make it all work. And I think we have to think about, there's several things, of course, MELF is piloting, and then what pieces of those, yes, that we over here at the state need to be doing. One is the allowance program, potentially, and then this program. there's going to be a big difference between the MELF pilot and this. And this is something, you know, I'll be honest, we're having kind of an internal debate about. You know, they're creating the, you know, it's the Cadillac program, it's the gold program. You know, they have these evaluators that are going out to the child cares for quality rating, and they're evaluating, say if Nancy's Wisconsin's the child care provider, on her interactions with the child. They're giving a lot of feedback, they're spending a lot of time. Now, we are hearing from the child cares that they like this a lot. But you know what? You know what the cost is? It's an evaluator. And so the cost that they have and are spending for the evaluators, we're not going to be able to do that. So I want to wait for the results, but our program, and this is what happens here at the Capitol, is taking their Cadillac and, you know, and turning it into our, not even a BMW, we used to use Pinto, Chevy, is probably what we're going to have to do. And so part of it would be getting the framework into place so that their evaluation and this can kind of meet, you know, in the middle when they come out. If we could wait, I mean, that's an option. I mean, in any good policy decision, doing nothing is actually an option. Or we could move forward. We are gaining some traction with the Early Childhood Caucus and the leadership of moving it forward because we could see the vision of how this could work. I think if we take a very slow uptake and get the framework into place, realizing the departments will probably be charged with fleshing this out and making the standards and making a lot of these things work, we could get a lot of this work done and potentially complement it with the work of the MELF. That's what I'm hoping, is it'll sort of, you know, merge.
Thank you, Representative Slavik. Ms. Johnson. Representative Slavik, do you want to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, renew my motion that House File 246 is laid over for possible inclusion into the Early Childhood Finance Omnibus Bill.
As amended.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members.
One quick aside, Ms. Johnson. Representative Downey and I would agree, I believe, that you've got a great superintendent in Chase Anderson.
Well, thank you, Representative Rosenthal. I suppose we could give you a quality rating here, but oh, please. Well, we'll do that later.
Maybe start out of 2 and move towards a 4 by the end of the session.
But no, you did a very nice job. Thank you. I know it's not easy, and I appreciate you being up here. Members, what we're going to have to do is we are finding that quality rating system is taking more time, just like it did the other day, sometimes when we scheduled more time for the hearing. And I, as a chair, want to make sure that we're hearing your concerns. So I think what we're going to do, Ms. Lovern, I hate to ask you to do this. We will try to get to your testimony, but if not, we may have to ask you to come back, okay? Ms. Thompson, because you are here and we know you're away from their child care, I think we'd like to ask you to go next, if you could come up to the to testify. And Mr. Kerr, if you want to come down as well, then we'll take Dr. Ephraim and Mr. Pritchard, and then we will see how much time we have left, okay? I hate to do that. We're just we're learning QRS takes a little longer here. So, thank you. Well, welcome to the committee.
If you could thank you.
State your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Lisa Thompson, and I'm very grateful and excited to be here to have the opportunity today to come before you and offer my humble perspective on the Parents Aware rating system as a family child care provider. For those of you that are not already familiar with family child care, we're licensed child care programs based in private homes, and we transform our homes to provide a stimulating, loving, safe environment for a small, mixed age group of children from birth to the primary school years. I've been a family child care provider here in Ramsey County for over 15 years, and I have recently completed the Parent Aware rating process. 2 weeks ago, I had an opportunity to come before this committee and tell you that children are learning in family child care, and that a day in family child care may look different than other early care environments, but
but the education that children are receiving is meaningful and significant. Now, to illustrate this point, if you may indulge me for just a moment here, I brought this apple and this banana. Now, both are good, good for our bodies. Both are fruit, important for good health. But it's my guess that if I went around and asked each one of you, you would choose a different one that you prefer, and for different reasons. I wouldn't get the same answer from everyone, but the fact that you each gave me different answers would not make either one of these any less valuable to our bodies and to our health. Now, before I take a bite of this apple, I want to know what's inside of it. I want to know if there's no bad spots. I want to make sure that there are no worms in it. So I brought a tool to check it out inside of it. And this tool is really effective in getting into this apple.
Can we tell you're a child care provider?
Yeah.
We appreciate this. I think we're allowed to have props, right?
And candy.
Okay.
But this tool is not effective in finding out what's in this banana. In the same way, I am not going to be able to get into this apple like this. Okay? Apple Center, Banana Family Child Care. This tool, Parents Aware. Parents Aware could be the best thing that ever happened to family child care and the children and families that we serve. And I'll explain my qualification on that statement in just a minute, but first I want to say that family child care providers are really excited for the opportunity that Parents Aware offers us to demonstrate to parents and to the community that about the quality of care that we are offering children. Family child care providers are grateful for the quality improvement supports that are in place with Parents Aware. And family child care providers have been energized by the validation that the fact that the planners of Parents Aware gave family child care, the validation that the planners gave family child care by including us in the program. Parents Aware is showing itself to be one of the strongest forces in moving quality to its highest standard for children here in our state. Parents Aware also provides an accountability for us in the jobs that we do. In my role as president of the union of the county of as president of the union in my county for family child care providers called Family Child Care Providers Together, CCPT, I've had the opportunity to hear from other child care providers, family child care providers, about their experiences with Parents Aware. And this is why I have qualified my previous statement with the words could be when saying that Parents Aware is the best thing that happened. As Louise Stoney testified early care is not a one-size-fits-all, and a rating system must recognize this to be accurate. To be relevant to parents and validating to a wide variety of quality early childhood programs, Parents Aware standards must allow for the recognition of the characteristics that make programs other than Head Start and centers special, such as the language and culturally specific care that we offer, the caregiver-child bonding and attachment that we specialize in, the mixed age groups and the opportunities for education that this provides, and the small group settings that allow for personalized and individual attention. Now, I can tell you that I don't have an adult stationed in the napping room with my infants. But I can tell you that the children in my care have so valued their experiences with me that now grown, several entrust their own children to my care. I can tell you that Provider Chu Vang does not use an approved assessment tool. But I can tell you that the parents she works for enormously benefit from the fact that you can explain the value of babbling and singing to her infant in their home language of Hmong.
So we're going to have to ask you to move along. However, you know what I guess want to know, do you have your rating? Are you going to tell us?
and it sounds like there's some issues, and I kind of wonder how to help us understand those. Besides your testimony, so we should think about sometime how we can do that, because I think we all do want to understand what's like and what it was like for you to go through that rating process. So, but please proceed.
I initially received a 2, but I had the points for 3, and I worked hard with the resource specialist in being able to use all of those points and have a 3. I'm several points away from a 4, and hopefully with the quality improvement plan, I can bring my program up to that standard.
Ms. Thompson, how did you find experience with the evaluator?
The staff, I think, are wonderful. They have been very helpful, and I've heard from other providers that it's been an experience that's really improved in their program.
Thank you. And I like the apple and the banana. Any other questions, Representative Biskin?
No.
Oh, okay. Any other questions? I think at some point, members, we should hear more about what it's really like out there, and so we'll try to schedule some time to do that. We appreciate you being here today and sharing your experience.
Thank you.
Mr. Kerr? And then we'll have Dr. Ephraim and Tom Pritchard come up, or if they want to get ready.
Representative Slavik, members of the committee, I think I'll speak on the fly a little bit today because I recognize your shortness of time. I would tell you, Representative, I was thrilled last night to hear some of the speakers. It's been a long time since I wanted to hear that kind of talk about early education in Minnesota. I was about, even though I was in the overflow room, I was going, oh yeah, but, you know, so.
It was such a fun in the overflow room.
It was. I think what I need to make very clear to you, Chair Slawick, as well as members of this committee, that certainly public education and community education, as we have school readiness, the program housed inside of community education, that we stand in support of having high-quality learning environments for all of our young children. We certainly know the value of those children coming to school prepared for school day one. We know what that value is. I think, Chair Slawick, you also used the words that you're learning and people are learning. And I would tell you that the professionals that I would represent as a part of the Minnesota Community Ed Association are still learning. There is some fears. There are fears about how the funding is going to be tied to this discussion. There are fears that in light of the fact that they haven't seen a funding increase since 92, they're concerned about, is this going to be another onerous administrative task that's going to be added, and will this take money away from children and children being served? So the fears I hear are those. Not a fear that we're going in the right direction in Minnesota about looking at creating quality learning environments. The fears are whether or not we'll have lots of additional tools to serve those children that we care about. So I think that, in the learning world, that's kind of what we see. I think the other thing that I want to stress, because we've heard it a few times, is that market choice. It's almost implied that there isn't market choice in the school setting. And I need to, I think, give you at least a reference point. I can speak to Anoka Hennepin, and I didn't introduce myself. Speak for Anoka Hennepin, Community Education Director for Anoka Hennepin. Is that in our case, we have 1,300 children enrolled in our school readiness program. If about a $1.2 million program for us in Anoka Hennepin, we get about $400,000 from the state. So parents are making choices significantly in our case, spending money to engage in our program and be a part of our program. And the issues that we see are the issues that many of us see. We don't have enough resources to serve the most at-risk children in our school district the way we would like to. It costs money for transportation and moving those kids around. So those are the kinds of issues that we see. But we stand ready to work with you.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. I'd like to ask, I don't know, Tom Pritchard, if you want to come forward, and Dr. Efren, just to say, members, we are having meetings, as we said, with the providers. We've been met with the school readiness folks a couple times. They're meeting again tonight. There are fears out there, and there are concerns, and, you know, I have concerns, too, and I think we all should, and we have some things we need to work on to make sure the system goes well. Who would like to go first? Okay. Dr. Ephraim, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. My name is Dr. Karen Ephraim. I'm here on behalf of EdWatch to raise some other questions and concerns about both of these bills and the idea of a statewide quality rating system. Both the amendments now
specifically mention the kindergarten readiness assessment and the early childhood indicators of progress, which actually makes it, despite the talk about it not being cookie cutter or one size fits all, actually puts it in to a perspective of having a state determined set of standards and assessment, and one single assessment. And just for perspective, this legislature spent 5 years debating standards and assessments regarding K through 12 and the profile of learning. We have not done that. You, as legislators, and the public have not done that with regard to early childhood, and I would be very concerned to do that, especially given as you're receiving a copy of the checklist for the Kindergarten Readiness Assessment Work Sampling System, how vague, how subjective, and basically how unreliable it is. Even on things that are supposed to be academic, like reading and math, we are talking about things like showing understanding of beginning understanding of numbers and quantity, showing an appreciation for books and reading, not can they count to 10, not do they know their alphabet, but those types of things. And I will, for the new members, remind you of testimony from Tracy Wallace, who is one of the trainers of the Kindergarten Readiness Assessment, who testified before this committee in 2007. And I won't read all of what I was going to read, but basically she said, with work sampling or other kinds of observational assessments, you might wonder about the quality of the observations that teachers did. Are they accurate? Is this child really demonstrating a proficient, or is it really in process? We wonder about these things with performance-based assessments. She also talked about the fact that children are poor test takers and that the child factors play into this. So we're talking about big-time training issues.
I'd ask you to wrap up and running out of time.
But the question isn't whether they are ready for kindergarten, but ultimately how well they will do in school. And there are multiple states that have had experience with early childhood programs that have actually found declines in academic performance, such as on the National Assessment of Educational Progress reading assessments in fourth grade. So we need to be looking at those kinds of things. We're talking about a takeover of private child care. We don't have enough data even from the pilot project to justify cost and intrusiveness. We're talking about burden on child care providers, and parents aren't even asking for this kind of rating system. If you look at the Department of Human Services focus group studies, they do not mention any of them in the study or the study cited that academics and learning are their first priority. It's quality, it's safety, it's caregiver interaction, it's things like that. So before you go implementing a whole big framework that is having such enormous implications, you really ought to be considering some of these other issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Is it Dr. Pritchard?
Sure, no.
Okay. Mr. Pritchard, all right. You get the
I've been called worse things than that. So.
Okay.
Thank you. Madam Chair, my name is Tom Pritchard, President of the Minnesota Family Council, and I just want to quickly raise some concerns we see with the statewide rating system, which make it, I think, frankly, quite problematic. First of all, we have concerns with the inherent, I think, kind of almost assumption, as you look at some of the vision statements about this applying to all children. We have concerns that, frankly, preschool and child care programs aren't always in the best interest of kids. In fact, there's been studies showing for non-disadvantaged kids, they can actually be harmful to kids. So we have concerns there. Secondly, we have concerns about if applying to private and public. We really see this almost as analogous to the profile of learning, where there were controversial, subjective standards which were attempting to be imposed. And not only was that a controversy because it was in the public sector, but this would extend it to the private sector, so we have concerns about that. A third concern, anytime you expand regulations, you're raising the cost of doing business. And so we see there's going to be additional costs here, whether they'll be noticeable or not, they're going to be there, so there's going to be additional costs. A fourth concern is we believe that this will reduce choice and options because, in a sense, this is a one-size-fits-all. All early child programs, preschool programs, will be rated according to the same system. And frankly, anytime you have a standard that drives the system, that's true for testing and teaching, it's going to be true for this. So in effect, this will reduce choices and options because it's a one-size-fits-all approach. And the last point is it's been repeatedly said this is voluntary, but in fact, I don't think it will be voluntary in the sense that if you're not rated, you're going to be stigmatized, you're going to maybe not get funding, you're not going to get referrals, and you're going to be ostracized. In fact, Madam Chair, you said that this will pressure people to participate, and I think that's a reality we have to look at. And there's the talk about let's having stars. There's rating systems for hotels, restaurants. Those are fine and good, but those are private. This is the state coming in and imposing its standards. And I don't know would we look at something differently if the state was now rating restaurants and hotels and things like that. I think we'd have problems with that. But this is the state getting into the business, and therefore we have some major concerns. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate bringing those forward. Numbers, anything else? Again, Ms. Levernine, sorry. We will reschedule you with your schedule and our schedule, something that works. Members, with that, we are adjourned. Just to say, Tuesday we will have a hearing on the budget from DHS and MDE. So with that, we are adjourned.